WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports, and now.
Talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is Monday, March 18th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Mix of sun and clouds today. Not as warm as it has been. The high 51. Tonight and overnight, partly cloudy, low 36, and then Tuesday, sunshine, more winter-like, high 48. If you're walking out the door with us right now, it's 46 and partly cloudy in Malvern out on Long Island. It's 41 and partly cloudy in Booton down in New Jersey, and 44 and overcast here outside our Midtown studio. So much to get to as we work our way up. 6 o'clock hour, sit-in friends in the morning. I have to tell you about this discovery very quickly that I made in last hour. And maybe it'll be useful to you. My iPods, for some reason, went into this mode where the outside speakers on the iPad were AirPods weren't working. The AirPods, so I had the AirPods in my ear, because I could hear that they were working. But you know how that little outside speaker on them? That's what was working. I tried everything that Apple told me to do to try and fix them. And then this morning, I had like 10 minutes of time to myself as I was putting the news together. And I said, let me try one last thing before I spend $150 on a new pair, because they're expensive. And I go to Reddit and I see that there's 500 comments on the solution to fix what's wrong with AirPods when the volume is too low. And some guy said, if you suck on the outside of the AirPod, that will do something to clean them out and it'll work. And I said, oh, this is nonsense. This is total nonsense. But you know what? I don't want to spend $160 on a pair. Maybe this will work. So I spent 20 seconds sucking on the outside of the AirPod, and I put them in my ear, and they work again. So why that isn't on the guidelines of Apple when Apple tells you what to do, they sent me through like 100 steps, you know, taking them off, Bluetooth, putting them back on, the whole works. So thank you, Reddit. Boy, Reddit came through, and now I am $160 is back in my pocket, so thank you, Reddit. We are watching over the weekend as they were evacuating citizens from Haiti, American citizens. Things have just gotten worse there over the weekend. A flight chartered by the U.S. State Department got 30 citizens out. They were flown from Haiti on this flight into Miami last night. When they got off the flight, they just talked about how incredibly bad it is. These gangs have taken over in Port-au-Prince, and you have people who are essentially hungry there because they're afraid to go to the local supermarket, afraid that they'll be attacked by these gangs that have taken over. And what the American government has done is they're posting messages on X, on Instagram, on Facebook, telling Americans, hey, if you're trapped there, let us know you're there, and we'll do our best to get to you to get you out. And so that was the case last night with these 30 Americans who were in Haiti and trapped. They got onto this flight, were flown back home. And the U.S. State Department encouraging American citizens that are still there to get out, because they say it's only going to get worse. They're warning that as bad as it is now, it is going to get a whole lot worse. And then you had Governor DeSantis over the weekend in Florida warning Haitians not to try to set sail for Florida, which would make sense since it's not so far away. They're afraid this is going to happen. It's happened in the past.
The most likely scenario is you will be stopped and you will be returned to your country of origin.
The governor says he's sending more resources to intercept what would the would-be migrants. DeSantis also signing bills that increase penalties for driving without a license, as well as crimes committed by people returning to the country after being deported.
So it's a hazardous journey. It's not worth doing. And we have the resources that are going to continue to keep the people of Florida safe.
Yeah, and then talking with Haitian Americans who have loved ones back home, they're just saying they can't get through. And when they do get through, they get stories of people who, again, hungry. They're afraid to go to the supermarket. So just a disastrous scene in Haiti. All right, let's bring it back home. Something a whole lot lighter of a topic. We're seeing the self-checkout lines are being taken away from stores. Right. There was a time where they were just putting them in every single supermarket. Now some major chains say they're going to pull back on self-checkout because they find they're getting ripped off big time by people who pay for one item then don't pay for another item and put it into their bag.
The retailer announced this putting
this is a Target, by the way, the latest to get out of the self-checkout industry.
The retailer announced this putting a cap on the number of items shoppers can have at self-checkouts, a move that has plenty of justification, according to marketing professor Mike Porter.
Some people use the self-checkouts. Some people hate the self-checkouts. Some people are going to appreciate the fact that they're not in the self-checkout line behind somebody that's got 97 items in their cart.
Target says it wants to speed up the process by limiting shoppers at self-checkout to 10 items. The express self-checkout lanes will hit most Target stores on Sunday. I'm Jim Forbes.
Yeah, a lot of supermarket chains, though, pulling them away completely, saying it's just not worth it. One of the world's largest adult entertainment websites has been blocked access to Texas now, thanks to a law that requires age verification. This happened over the weekend. And there's a lot of blowback against former state representative Matt Krause, who led the charge to push to restrict kids' access to Pornhub 3 years ago. Now the age verification is there, and you have people in Texas who say, I don't want to go through the process of telling you how old I am just to get onto the website.
Very telling that a site would shut down complete access to everybody only for the fact that they have to have age verification.
So in the statement, the Canadian-based company says the Texas law infringes on adults' rights to access protected speech. They had previously sued to block it, but a new ruling from a federal appeals court sided with Texas, saying that pornography is proven to harm brain development. But now Pornhub says, no, we just won't do business in Texas anymore.
My concern in 2021 is that these sites were being used for child exploitation.
Former state representative Matt Krause, who started the fight against Pornhub, says it's suspicious that Pornhub is fighting for the right to allow children access.
Affirms that we were on the right track in 2021, and it's definitely the right thing to happen in 2024.
Yeah, so we've seen this in other places as well. North Carolina had the same sort of thing. One of the porn websites cut off access to them for the same reason, age verification. Whatever it was, they were able to work it out there. Will they be able to work it out here? Well, of course, we'll follow the story out of Texas. WABC News Time 509, when we were here on Friday, all we were talking about was that Subway shooting. Well, now we know the Brooklyn DA's office is not going to file criminal charges against the man who wrangled that gun away from another rider and shot him in the head on the subway on Thursday. This is the NYPD calling for a crackdown on fare beaters, as the man who was shot by his own gun actually jumped the turnstiles at the Hoyt Street station. He was a fare evader.
Oftentimes we see people enter to the subway station looking to cause harm, and they never pay the fare.
Chief of Department Jeff Madry says the evader walked through an emergency door before boarding that A train, started a fight with the other man before pulling the gun out. Thankfully, he dropped the gun. The other guy was able to pick it up. They all say it was self-defense. That's why the Brooklyn DA is not going to go after the guy who shot the other guy with his own gun.
So we will continue to be in our subways. We will continue to address that the services, people not paying at the turnstile.
Yes, so this is what the chief of department, NYPD, has been saying as we go too lenient on these people who jump the turnstile. It's time for that to stop.
If it's a young child who doesn't have the money to pay fare, if it's a working parent, someone looking for a job who doesn't have the money to pay fare, all officers have that discretion.
Yeah, so I think what they're trying to say is the people who repeatedly do it and then are involved in other crimes shouldn't be walking the streets. 510, it's not clear what the Senate will do with that bill passed by the House that could ban Chinese-owned TikTok if it isn't sold to an American company. South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds says he supports the direction of the House bill, but stops short of saying whether he would vote for a ban in the Senate.
I think it is something that we're going to have to do something about. The best approach would be if they were to divest and to allow for American ownership. If not, then we're probably going to have to eliminate it from the platform.
Yeah, I was talking to my kids about this over the weekend, the ban. I said, would you be upset? They spend a lot of time on TikTok. They said, no, they'll just go elsewhere. They said those same videos are on YouTube, they're on Instagram, they're on Facebook, so no big deal if TikTok goes away. In fact, what we're seeing is the engagement with TikTok since this announcement has gone down a little bit, and you even have some content creators who on TikTok, were on TikTok, have said goodbye, said, hey, come find me at YouTube. The bill that passed the House last week could force the Chinese company ByteDance to sell its stake in TikTok to an American company. If they don't, they say, that's when that ban would come in. President President Biden says St. Patrick's Day has always been a special day for his family.
It's not just about heritage, but it really is about faith. So much of it being Irish means to be connected to the Catholic teachings I grew up with.
Yeah, he hosted about 200 guests, including Ireland's prime minister, the leaders of the Catholic Church at the White House yesterday for a St. Patrick's Day brunch. It included Irish soda bread, eggs, Florentine, and bacon. That doesn't sound too bad.
And, you know, the friendship goes back centuries. But today is an important period, an important milestone. Nearly 100 years of diplomatic relations, Taoiseach. And every 100 years of Ireland and the United States.
As part of this breakfast, he also spoke about the Russian invasion of Ukraine, called on the House to pass a sweeping national security package passed by the Senate.
I urge you to send me the national security bill now. The bill includes funding for Ukraine and Israel, and maybe equally important, humanitarian assistance to Gaza. They badly, badly need it.
Yeah, he implored lawmakers to get it done.
And it sends a clear message. America stands up for freedom, and we bow down to no one in the world.
And out to the 2024 campaign for the White House, President Biden's reelection campaign says they raised $53 million in February.
The Biden campaign released new figures that show about 1.3 million donors have made nearly 3.4 million contributions, and that 97% of those donations were under $200. The figures show Biden raised about $10 million in the 24 hours following his State of the Union address. His campaign manager said the stakes of this election couldn't be higher for the future of the country. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
We reached out to the Trump campaign for their numbers. They say February was a healthy month for them as well, but they have not released their final numbers. Meanwhile, Donald Trump says it's going to be a bloodbath for the country if he's not reelected this year.
The radical left Democrats rigged the presidential election in 2020, and we're not going to allow them to rig the presidential election in 2024.
The former president making the comments Saturday while he spoke at a campaign rally in Ohio. He mocked Georgia DA Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade, the former lead prosecutor in Trump's election interference case. He called them both love lives who tried to take down a president.
From the very first day that we take back the White House from crooked Joe Biden, I believe we are going to have the four greatest years in the history of our country.
Trump encouraged the crowd to just get out and vote.
You have to go and you have to vote. You have to vote like you've never voted before. And I said it before and I'll say it again. This is all about November 5th, the most important day, I believe. I really believe.
The former president also sitting down with Fox News over the weekend talking about the war in Ukraine. He says it never would have happened if he was in the White House.
I would have negotiated a deal. I don't even know if I would have had to negotiate. They never would have attacked while I was president.
Also defending his comments that he would not defend NATO members that don't meet defense spending targets. So this was when he was in the White House before. Says, hey, NATO members have to contribute more.
When I said that and when I made that statement, I want to energize them to pay.
Now, all part of an interview he did with Fox News. We're going to get more into that and more into those bloodbath comments as the morning wears on. But first, 5:15, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Monday. Good morning, Justin Ellick.
Happy Monday. Good morning to you, Noam Allen. Starting with the NBA and our Brooklyn Nets in San Antonio last night. The Nets lost 122-115 in overtime to the lowly Spurs. Victor Wembanyama had 33-16 to help the Spurs overcome 31 points by Brooklyn's Cam Thomas. Following Atlanta's win yesterday, Brooklyn is 4.5 games behind the Hawks for 10th place in the Eastern Conference and the final berth in the play-in tournament. Tonight, the Knicks return to action on the West Coast, set to tip off with the Golden State Warriors at 10 p.m. On the ice at the Garden, Johnny Brodzinski scored the go-ahead goal in the second period, and the Rangers defeated the local rival Islanders 5-2 yesterday. Mika Zibanejad, Will Cooley, Kapokako, and Alexei Lafreniere also scored for the Rangers, who have won 5 of 6. Igor Shesterkin finished with 25 saves. Bo Horvat scored twice, and Ilya Sorokin made 26 saves, but the Islanders fell short en route to their fourth consecutive loss. In Vegas, the Devils couldn't get much going against the Golden Knights, losing 3-1 last night. Nico Hischier netted the lone goal for New Jersey. And last but not least, Selection Sunday yesterday gave us our two fields of 64 teams each for the both the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournaments, set to begin tomorrow and Wednesday, respectively. Defending national champion UConn, a day removed from winning the Big East tournament and improving to 31-3, was chosen as the men's number one overall seed yesterday during the NCAA tournament selection show. The Huskies are joined on the one line by Houston, Purdue, and then North Carolina, three teams that have been consistently in the top 10 during the 23-24 season, but lost in their respective conference tournaments last week. The Big East found that out as three 20-win teams in the Big East, I should say. Providence, Seton Hall, and St. John's all were snubbed by the NCAA Selection Committee. St. John's has a legitimate gripe here, finishing 20-13 overall, winning six games in a row, four of them by at least 14 points before a loss to overall number one seed UConn in the Big East semifinals on Friday. On the women's side of things, the South Carolina Gamecocks were named the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament yesterday, looking to become the 10th women's basketball team to go unbeaten for an entire season. They're joined as one seeds by Iowa, USC, and Texas. That's your sports now.
Wait, so the only locals in the NCAA tourney are Wagner. UConn, yeah. Wagner, and St. Peter's, is that right?
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Wow.
So, yeah, Seton Hall and St. John's, big-time snubs there. So yeah. Unfortunate for Rick Pitino after that fiery speech he had, I wouldn't want to say about a month and a half, 2 months ago. His team really turned it around, ended the season hot. So I guess it worked.
It didn't work.
Right, not to the extent that he wishes. But, you know, year one, I would say a success for Latino.
No doubt about it.
That's your sport. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 519. Let's head back out to the White House campaign trail. House Republican Mike Turner disagrees with Donald Trump, referring to the convicted January 6 rioters as hostages, but he says he understands why the former president is defending them.
Now, you would think, of course, that Donald Trump would have very strong emotional feelings about the individuals who have been in jail and have gone to prison over these.
The Ohio congressman says there has been concern over the cases that have been prosecuted by the Justice Department. Turner noted that some of the cases have been overturned. Meanwhile, Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy says Donald Trump's remarks on immigrants and the possibility of a bloodbath if he's not reelected make some voters concerned about a potential second Trump term.
The general tone of the speech is why many Americans continue to wonder, should President Trump be president? That kind of rhetoric, it's always on the edge. Maybe doesn't cross, maybe does, depending upon your perspective.
And no shock here, former Vice President Mike Pence criticizing Donald Trump's praise of the Capitol riots, stopping short of holding his former boss criminally responsible for what happened on January 6th.
The people that ransacked the Capitol need to be held to the fullest account of the law, and I believe that they are. But the judgment about the president's efforts that day, I think, can be left to the American people.
And Pence now says he will not endorse Trump in the upcoming general election.
Donald Trump is pursuing and articulating an agenda that is at odds with the conservative agenda that we governed on during our 4 years.
Yeah, and he also said that one of the reasons he does not like his former boss is his policies on China.
This last week is his reversal on getting tough on China and supporting our administration's effort to force a sale of ByteDance TikTok.
An 80-year-old senator is making his position known about age limits in Congress. Of course, that's been all the discussion. You have the president, who's 81 years old. Trump is 77. But this 80-year-old senator talking about why he's getting out.
No, I don't think there should be an age limit for elected office. Each person has to make their own decision. I had to make an 8-year decision when I made my, because it was 2 years before the elections, a 6-year term. And I think it's the right decision.
That's what Maryland Senator Ben Cardin telling Meet the Press yesterday. He said he already announced he wouldn't be running for re-election. The debate around age limits for federal office have intensified, of course, over the last year or so. Congressman Adam Schiff says the Senate Majority Leader's speech, that being Chuck Schumer, last week about Israel, is incredibly important, although he admits he's not on board with one part of Chuck Schumer's speech.
And we are holding Israel to a high standard because we share not only national security interests with Israel, but also share our values with Israel. And while I wouldn't go as far as the leader in setting out the timing of elections, the fact that Israel's most staunch defender in the U.S. Congress, Chuck Schumer, should be making these remarks should be an earthquake in Israel.
The California Democrat referring to Senator Schumer's speech from the Senate floor in which he sharply criticized Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's approach to the conflict in Gaza, called for early elections in Israel. They're not set to take place until 2026. That is the National Security Advisor taking to the news shows over the weekend. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says it's up to the Israeli people to decide if they'll have new elections and new leadership.
He is the Prime Minister of Israel. We respect the sovereignty of the Israeli people.
Kirby referring to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. Talking about that speech, he says President Biden recognizes Schumer was speaking for many Americans concerned about how the war is going. He says that Biden and Netanyahu have known each other for 40 years, and they don't always agree, but they still get along.
What we said is we will not support, cannot support, an operation in Rafah that doesn't have an executable, verifiable, achievable plan to take care of the 1.5 million people that are trying to find refuge in Rafah.
Yeah, so let's give the Israeli Prime Minister the final word. He's speaking out over the weekend on CNN. Netanyahu saying the majority of Israelis support the country's approach to the war against Hamas.
If Senator Schumer opposes these policies, he's not opposing me. He's opposing the people of Israel.
Netanyahu says it's totally inappropriate for the senator, Senator Schumer, to call for a replacement of Israeli leadership.
After 9/11, you're in the midst of fighting the war against Al-Qaeda, and an Israeli would say, you know, what we need now is either new elections in the U.S., or if your system doesn't allow, then President Bush should resign.
Prime Minister says his government is doing everything it can to get aid into Gaza. He blames Hamas for the aid and not reaching civilians and children.
The problem isn't getting the trucks in. The problem is that once they're getting in, they're looted by Hamas or looted by gangs. And what we're seeing, what we're trying to do with some other powers is to try to get the aid to the actual civilians who need them.
That taking place is the main UN hunger agency says malnutrition is getting worse in Gaza by the day.
The UN Relief and Works Agency claimed on Saturday that one in three children under the age of two in northern Gaza is now acutely malnourished. In a social media post, the agency said children's malnutrition is spreading fast and reaching unprecedented levels. Palestinian media outlets reported on Saturday that 13 humanitarian aid trucks had reached parts of northern Gaza for the first time in 4 months. Israel's war against Hamas has been raging in the Gaza Strip since October. I'm Mark Mayfield.
WABC News Time 525. Let's bring it back home. New research shows the spring season has been gradually getting warmer across the U.S. for decades.
The new analysis by the nonprofit Climate Central, composed of scientists and science journalists, finds that springtime temperatures have gone up by an average of 2.2 degrees Fahrenheit in nearly 230 American cities since 1970. The group says warmer temperatures in the springtime can have ripple effects, including longer and more severe allergy seasons, earlier snow melt, and changes in all agricultural growing seasons. The nonprofit also concludes the trend is a reflection of human-caused global warming. I'm Scott Carr.
WABC News Time 526. Marriage rates in the U.S. are now back to pre-pandemic levels.
New government data shows there were just over 2 million marriages in the U.S. in 2022, roughly 6.2 marriages per 1,000 people. That's the highest level since 2018. Marriage rates dropped when COVID hit, and in 2020, there were only 1.6 million marriages nationwide. While numbers seem to have recovered from the pandemic, the last two decades have seen an overall downward trend in marriage rates. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Dr. Dre going to receive a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
One, two,
the hip-hop icon star will sit next to Snoop Dogg. He'll be honored in Los Angeles tomorrow. Snoop will be at the ceremony as well. He and record executive Jimmy Iovine will give speeches for the Compton-born Raptor. Dr. Dre is an eight-time Grammy winner. Let's take a look at the numbers on Wall Street. Wall Street closed lower to end the week on Friday. Stocks fell on inflation concerns ahead of this week's Federal Reserve policy meeting. Tech shares led the decline, with Apple, Microsoft, and Amazon all down 1% or more in volatile trading. At the closing bell, the Dow fell 190 points, S&P 500 lost 33, the Nasdaq dropped 155 points.
You're listening to one of the most iconic stations in the nation, an American original. Talk Radio 77 WABC and WABCradio.com. It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
That is me, 532. Good morning. It is Monday, March 18th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sun, clouds today, not as warm as it has been. The high will be 51. Tonight and overnight, partly cloudy, low 36, and then Tuesday sunshine, high 48. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are. 46, partly cloudy in Malvern out on Long Island. 41, partly cloudy in Booton down in New Jersey. And it is 44 and cloudy outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour right here in Midtown. Did you come into the city for the big St. Patrick's Day parade on Saturday? I mean, I can't remember a St. Patrick's Day, at least in recent memory, where the weather was so fantastic. I mean, the weekend was just gorgeous. And so you had probably way more people than usually show up for the parade. Sometimes when it's during the week, you get more people. When it's a beautiful day, though, it is fantastic.
The parade making its way up Fifth Avenue from 44th Street to 79th. Governor Kathy Hochul was there along with New York City Mayor Eric Adams and 150,000 other marchers. Cardinal Timothy Dolan, Archbishop of New York and an Irishman himself, told News 4 New York's Sarah Wallace the beautiful sunny weather was a gift.
We needed it this time of year with all the trauma going on in the world. Hey, everybody, don't you think? Can you go get me a carb beef sandwich?
Sure. Lisa Salvati, NBC News Radio, New York.
And then yesterday they did the inclusive St. Patrick's Day parade on Staten Island. This was the parade that's on top of the other parade, the original parade, not to get it all confusing, that took place on March 3rd. The inclusive one involves the LGBTQ groups that have fought to be part of the Staten Island parade but have been kept out of it, so because they want to march under their own banner. So they had that parade yesterday.
We give thanks for the welcome, and it sends a beautiful message to young people on the sidewalks and all around who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender that you belong.
For the first time on Staten Island, I couldn't be more proud and grateful, and the support of the mayor and everybody on Staten Island, we are feeling the love and unity here.
Yeah, they had a pretty big turnout to this parade. Again, the weather, of course, helped because it was just gorgeous outside. This year, the Mayor Adams took part in this parade. He was the one who authorized this second LGBTQ-friendly St. Patrick's Day parade on Staten Island, so he marched in it yesterday.
And we are breaking stereotypes by marching on Staten Island for the first time, a parade that the organizers have asked for, and we're going to make it happen.
But the mayor's decision to hold this parade was not without controversy. You had the Catholic League president, Bill Donahue, says that Mayor Adams has authorized the St. Patrick's Day parade in Staten Island, one whose express purpose is to compete with and then undermine a traditional St. Patrick's Day parade that honors the patron saint of the Archdiocese of New York. He says his aggression smacks of bigotry and is arguably illegal. But, of course, members of the LGBT community pushing back against that. One of them, Casey Hawkins, was one of the original voices who advocated for inclusivity among the LGBTQ parade in the St. Patrick's Day parade on Staten Island.
When we started the protest, it was eight of us marching in the rainbow formation down the parade route before the parade, and people heckled us and people had a problem with us marching. And now, year after year, we chipped away slowly but surely and winning over the hearts of why LGBT people belong in this parade, just like we belong in every community event on Staten Island.
Yeah, so Manhattan lifted its ban on LGBTQ groups joining its parade back in 2014, but Staten Island still has not. WABC News Time 538. Do you remember back on February 13th, it was a snow day, and the Department of Education decided to do a remote learning day for all of the city's 1.2 million school kids, and it was a total disaster because lots of people weren't able to sign on to get online to get lessons from their teachers. So over the weekend, the DOE says We haven't totally fixed this yet, so I guess good for them for being honest about it. Tens of thousands of families on that day had tech problems. And here's the deputy chancellor, Emma Vadera, saying they're working with IBM to fix this problem, but it's still not totally fixed yet.
We would need to do a staggered start to the day to ensure there's enough time for all of our folks, over a million, to log in.
Yeah, so this was the problem, I guess, on February 13th, is so many people tried to sign on at once that it just knocked the system down. The IBM server could not handle all of that. So now they're going to do some sort of test run to make sure that it can in the future.
We've been working with them on a daily basis since then to ensure their login tool can take the capacity we need to be able to do a full transition to remote.
What was interesting about that day, you had lots of parents complaining, why don't you just give the kids a snow day instead of this nonsense? But Chancellor Banks says no one should have any illusions. They're not going to do these snow days anymore, and that remote learning is only going to become bigger than it is now.
I believe that beyond the crisis and emergencies, that our school system, not only here in New York, but all across the nation, particularly with the advent of AI, we're going to be moving more and more deeply into remote and virtual learning opportunities.
Yeah, well, they better get it right with IBM. Andre Gordon, did you hear this story? Did you watch this over the weekend? My phone was buzzing with this carjacking that took place in Trenton. This murderer, alleged murderer, 26-year-old Andre Gordon, carjacked somebody in Trenton. He didn't hurt that individual, but then he goes over to Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which, if you're not familiar with the Trenton area, is right across the river, and he shoots and kills his stepmother, his sister, and the mother of his children. Then he gets back into that car and he drives back to his home in Trenton.
Coming to a peaceful resolution is the ultimate goal of the police department and all the law enforcement that's involved.
Yeah, so he barricaded himself in his house. There was word that he had hostages for a while. But what ended up happening was the police surrounded his house on Phillips Avenue in Trenton, trying to get him to come out. They had the speaker set up, but apparently he had left the house as they were setting up that perimeter. But they found him. He was walking on New York Avenue. The New Jersey Attorney General, Matthew Plotkin, releasing a statement saying that Gordon was processed at the Trenton Police Station, being held as of last night at the Mercer County Correctional Lockup, pending a hearing that would send him back to Pennsylvania to face those charges for murdering those three that he murdered in Bucks County on Saturday. This was just sort of a strange and desperately sad story out of Long Island. So apparently, if we're to believe this, a man and his wife, elderly, had made this deal that one of them would murder the other and then the other would take his own life. Now, apparently, medical situation not so great here. So this man accused of fatally stabbing his 82-year-old wife in Wantagh. Now charged with second-degree murder, police say officers responded to a welfare check at this home on Oakland Avenue over the weekend after the couple's adult son said something wasn't right at the house. They discovered the victim. Her name is Mary Heaton. She was dead on the floor with multiple stab wounds. And her husband, Anthony, said, yeah, he did it as part of this pact that he was going to kill her and then he was going to commit suicide.
When officers arrived at scene, Mr. Anthony Heaton, who's 74 years old, met the officer by the door and announced to him that he had stabbed his wife.
Yes, so he admitted to doing so. He was arrested. The couple had been married for 40 years, had no history of domestic violence. Apparently, they had made this pact because she was sick.
He had planned to take her life and then commit suicide. He went, he stabbed her multiple times, strangled her. When he caused her death, he then did not kill himself.
Yeah, apparently he couldn't bring it to himself to kill himself. So now he's, of course, in all kinds of problems, all kinds of trouble. Her health apparently had been diminishing over the years. And from what neighbors say, the overwhelming stress of taking care of her, this is why they came up with this pact, but he didn't follow through. And here's the neighbors who say they knew Anthony and they know him as a good guy.
He gets to be a lot to take care of somebody that's sick. You never know. Sometimes something just happens or whatever. It's just sad.
Here, 40 years. You know, I'm here a long time. As old as my three children were born and raised here. and a beautiful Wanto community.
Yeah, so sad. I mean, as someone who has elderly parents, you know, when they start to suffer from these health issues, you sort of get an understanding of why somebody would make a pact like this, because nobody wants to suffer. But Anthony didn't follow through, so he has pled not guilty. He's due back in court on Tuesday. He's being held without bail as of last night. There's a mystery surrounding the demolition of a historic synagogue in Brooklyn yesterday. This is a weird story, and we tried to get more information before we came to air. We weren't able to. But it's unclear. Someone gave the order to tear down Chevre Anshe Lubowitz Synagogue, which is on 12th Avenue in Borough Park, has been there since 1907. So it was knocked down. But now we come to find out that nobody gave them the green light to knock this synagogue down. Posts on social media indicate people were trying to get landmark status for the building. The city says it does not issue permits for work, and they did not issue permits for work to knock this building down. So nobody's clear who knocked it down and why they knocked it down. But, of course, as more information comes into us, and what's a strange story, we will pass that on to you. All right, 5:45. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk, where we find Justin Alec.
Thank you, Noam Layden. Start with the NBA and our Brooklyn Nets in San Antonio last night, where the Nets lost 122-115 in overtime to the lowly Spurs. Victor Wembanyama had 33 points and 16 rebounds to help the Spurs overcome 31 points by Brooklyn's Cam Thomas. Following Atlanta's win yesterday, Brooklyn is 4.5 games behind the Hawks for 10th place in the Eastern Conference and the final berth in the play-in tournament. Tonight, the Knicks return to action on the West Coast, set to tip off with the Golden State Warriors at 10 p.m. On the ice at the Garden, Johnny Brodzinski scored the go-ahead goal in the second period, and the Rangers defeated the local rival Islanders 5-2 yesterday. Mika Zibanejad, Will Cooley, Capocacco, and Alexi Lafreniere also scored for the Rangers, who have won 5-6. Igor Shesterkin finished with 25 saves. Bo Horvat scored twice, and Ilya Sorokin made 26 stops, but the Islanders fell short en route to their fourth consecutive loss. In Vegas, the Devils couldn't get much going against the Golden Knights, losing 3-1 last night. Nico Hischier netted the lone goal for New Jersey. And last but not least, Selection Sunday yesterday gave us our two fields of 64 teams each for the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournament, set to begin tomorrow and Wednesday, respectively. Defending national champion UConn, a day removed from winning the Big East tournament and improving to 31-3, was chosen as the men's number one overall seed yesterday during the NCAA tournament selection show. The Huskies are joined on the one line by Houston, Purdue, and North Carolina, three teams that have been consistently in the top 10 during the 23-24 season, but lost in their respective conference tournaments last week. The Big East found out that three 20-win teams, Providence, Seton Hall, and St. John's, are all snubbed by the NCAA selection committee. St. John's has a legitimate gripe here, finishing 20-13 overall, winning six games in a row for them by at least 14
points. Who would you take
points
out that would it replace? I understand they feel snubbed, but that means other 20-win teams made
yeah,
it into the
course
tournament. Do
I
they
mean,
deserve not? They
no,
don't deserve
I
to
don't,
be there?
I don't think so. And to be honest, a lot of, like Rick Pitino, for instance, actually, you know, didn't even really blame the selection committee. I mean, these guys have a tough enough job as it is. So every year people, you know, there are going to be teams that are just the odd teams out. That's just the way it works. Not everybody gets a shot to go. And then you get invited to the other tournament, the NIT or whatever. And, you know, that's obviously a second-tier sort of tournament. But, you know, if you want to play for something else, then you can go and play in that. St. John's declined to play in that. They're just going right to the offseason. So
if you're putting one 20-win team or 25-win team, whatever, against another, mm-hmm. it's toughness of schedule, I guess that's how they decide, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Right. Toughness of schedule, conference, I mean, all of these things get taken into account.
So maybe Seton Hall and St. John's didn't deserve to be there after all.
Well, that's what the selection committee
yeah.
said.
Okay.
You know, who am I to tell them that they're wrong?
Yeah, well, you can, but
yeah, but they, I mean, they watch it. Come on, they're watching all these games. It's very analytically based, and I think that's the main gripe when it comes to these selection processes. But it is what it is. I mean, they've been doing it like this for years now. So if you lose, you lose.
Well, I'm putting my money on Wagner and St. Peter's.
That's not a good idea. I don't know why you would do that.
Last time I put my money on St. Peter's, and it was a pretty damn good idea, actually. They made it to the Sweet 16, if I remember
right. All right.
Or did they even make it to the Elite Eight? I can't remember.
I can't remember either. Yeah. I can't remember. Providence, Seton Hall, St. John's, those are your three 20-win teams not making it in Nome. And on the women's side of things, South Carolina Gamecocks are going to be your number one seed. They're joined by Iowa, USC, and Texas. That's your sports. I'm Justin Allen, 77 WABC.
Let's catch up on some of the big stories of the morning. Continues just to be a total mess in Haiti. Gangs have taken over the city of Port-au-Prince. The government no longer in control. The State Department here warning Americans to get out. They've been posting messages on X and other social media platforms saying, hey, if you need help getting out, we're here to help you. 30 U.S. citizens were able to get on a flight from Haiti back to Miami last night. They tell just awful stories of not being able to leave their home to go shopping, that people are going hungry there. Meanwhile, you have politicians here saying they don't want Haitian migrants coming their way. One of them is Governor Ron DeSantis warning Haitians not to try to set sail for Florida.
The most likely scenario is you will be stopped and you will be returned to your country of origin.
The governor says he's sending more resources to intercept would-be migrants. DeSantis also signing bills over the weekend that would increase penalties for driving without a license, as well as crimes committed by people returning to the country after being deported.
So it's a hazardous journey. It's not worth doing. And we have the resources that are going to continue to keep the people of Florida safe.
Lots of talk about self-checkout counters at supermarkets, some of them pulling back, saying so much is being robbed from them at those self-checkout counters. Target is making some changes to its self-checkout policy now.
The retailer announced it's putting a cap on the number of items shoppers can have at self-checkouts, a move that has plenty of justification, according to marketing professor Mike Porter.
Some people use the self-checkout. Some people hate the self-checkout. Some people are going to appreciate the fact that they're not in the self-checkout line behind somebody that's got 97 items in their cart.
Target says it wants to speed up the process by limiting shoppers at self-checkout to 10 items. The express self-checkout lanes will hit most Target stores on Sunday. I'm Jim Forbes.
Lots of people in Texas waking up to find out they can't access Pornhub. One of the world's largest adult entertainment websites has blocked access to Texas thanks to a law that requires age verification. Former state representative Matt Krause started the push to restrict kids' access to Pornhub a long time ago.
It's very telling that a site would shut down complete access to everybody only for the fact that they have to have age verification.
In a statement, the Canadian-based company says the Texas law infringes on adults' rights to access protected speech. They had previously sued to block it, but a new ruling from a federal appeals court sided with Texas, saying that pornography is proven to harm brain development.
My concern in 2021 is that these sites were being used for child exploitation.
Krause, who started the fight against Pornhub, says it's suspicious that Pornhub is fighting for the right to allow children access.
Affirms that we were on the right track in 2021, and it's definitely the right thing to happen in 2024.
Over the weekend, we heard more from the Brooklyn DA's office about that subway shooting that took place on Thursday. They're not going to file criminal charges against the man who wrangled a gun away from another man and shot him on the head aboard that train. This is the NYPD calling for a crackdown on fare beaters as the man shot by his own gun as the train approached the Hoyt station Thursday was a fare evader.
Oftentimes we see people enter to the subway station looking to cause harm, and they never pay the fare.
Chief of Department there, Jeffrey Madry, says the evader walked through an emergency door before boarding that A train.
So we will continue to be in our subways. We will continue to address theft of services, people not paying at the turnstile.
Yeah, that going on is it was kind of a violent weekend in the city. Police searching for suspects after a verbal dispute ended violently with two women stabbed. One of them died outside this Brooklyn deli. This was early Sunday. It occurred at 4th Avenue around 2:20 in the morning. 19-year-old Samia Spain was stabbed in the neck and chest. Sania Spain was stabbed in the arm. They're twins, actually. They're twin sisters. One witness says they were with the sisters at a party, and they ended up at this deli to have something to eat late Sunday night. The witness explained that when a man came up to the two and made several advances, the sisters turned them down, and that's when the conversation apparently turned violent.
They're not sober. They got rejected, and they just escalated tenfold.
Like, we was all having a good night before this. We just had left, and we went to the store to get food. We was all getting sandwiches or, like, beef patties just to eat. We're hungry. We want to go home, and this happens.
Yeah, so both sisters transported to New York Presbyterian Methodist Hospital. One of them died. The other one's in stable condition. This morning, two men fled the scene. So far, cops haven't caught up with them. And we have an update on the story of a fire that took place in Brooklyn yesterday. Two people killed after a fire tore through their building in Brooklyn. This was about 7 o'clock last night in Bath Beach.
I started running from my apartment with pots of water trying to actually throw it on there to see if I could detain. I didn't see how big it actually was. By the time I got there with the third pot of water, it was like sort of out of control, and I had to think about getting my son out of there before anything got too crazy. And I put my animals in the back rooms because I wasn't able to have enough time to actually grab them.
Yeah, so two firefighters suffered minor injuries battling this blaze. There's been other fires in this building, but nothing deadly like this one.
He decided to take the cats and just leave, head downstairs.
But you just moved in today.
Yeah, definitely surprising, but, you know, bad things can happen at random times. So today just happened to be a unlucky day for us.
Yeah, boy, he's very mellow about the fact that he just moved into the building and now he has to move out after it caught fire. And we're just getting word. This is just coming in about 2 minutes ago. So I'm going to read it to you as I got it from DCPI, which is the public relations arm of the NYPD. They're now telling us these two people that were found dead in this fire in this building in Bath Beach, Brooklyn, were dead before the fire started. So there's going to be more to this story. And, of course, as more details come in about that fire and those two men who were dead before the fire started, of course, we will pass that on to you.